This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of WNYC Studios and the New Yorker.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. About a decade ago, I went to a well-to-do suburb north of Tel Aviv to meet with a youngish Israeli politician whose name was Naftali Bennett. I showed up at his house, and it was big, it was modern, it had flat-screen TVs. And we sat outside, and he talked about his years in the software industry and working as a chief of staff to Benjamin Netanyahu. Bennett was something pretty new in Israeli politics. He promised, I wrote then, to build a sturdy electoral bridge between the religious and the secular, the hilltop outposts of the West Bank and the startup suburbs. Bennett was fluent in Facebook. He quoted Seinfeld as much as he did the books of the Talmud. And he had been a leader of the settlers, but he no longer lived in a settlement. Yet there was no ambiguity at all about Bennett's stance on the Palestinian question. He was a hard-liner. He disdained the peace process of an earlier time. I'll do everything in my power to make sure they never get a state, he told me. No more illusions. Naftali Bennett is now the Prime Minister of Israel, having unseated Benjamin Netanyahu, who was the longest-running Prime Minister in the history of the state. Last week, I reached out to two writers in the region, one Palestinian and one Israeli, to talk about this political upheaval.
Ruth, how are you?
Hi.
How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great.
It's fine.
It's good to see you. Ruth Margalit lives in Tel Aviv, and she reports for The New Yorker from around the region. Now, Ruth, the coalition that brought Naftali Bennett to power just now is all over the map politically, but he himself, obviously, is very hardline on the Palestinian question. The coalition loathes Netanyahu, but I'm not quite sure how anything is going to change where the Palestinian question is concerned. Do you?
I don't see how it's going to change, at least not in the short term. I think there are some promising signs in the sense that it's, you're right about Naftali Bennett, that he himself is very much a hardliner, but it's also an alliance. You know, he only won 7 seats out of 120. So he's really reliant on these other factions. And among them are, you know, 2 left-wing parties. We have, for the first time ever in an Israeli government, we have an Arab party. So there are these sort of promising, kind of cautiously promising signs. But you're right. I mean, will the life of a Palestinian family living in Gaza change next week because Netanyahu is no longer in power and Bennett is? No. The answer is no, not yet.
And this change also comes in the context of a yet another conflict in which there was rocket fire and then bombing from Israeli fighter jets and hundreds dead, mostly Palestinians. And this has had an effect on Palestinian politics, and it's also had an effect on Palestinian Arabs in Israel. And you've reported on this. Tell us what's changed.
Well, I think for the first time in a long time, we're seeing this kind of cross-Palestinian sort of solidarity movement. You know, until now, whenever there were tensions in Gaza, in other places, it didn't necessarily mean that things would sort of spark up in the West Bank or in East Jerusalem. And inside Israel, not at all, you know. And I mean, occasionally, but this was very rarely the case that Palestinian citizens of Israel, who are known in Israel as sort of Arab Israelis, they never really joined this kind of pan-Palestinian movement. And now they have. And I think partly it's because, you know, Netanyahu, after a decade, more than a decade in power, made life really very untenable for them inside Israel, for these Arab Israelis. And so there's a deep sense of frustration and despair. And we saw the sparks of that. Now, on the other hand, you can say, well, I just said that we have an Arab party joining the government for the first time. So how does that, doesn't that mean that suddenly they're sort of integrating and are taking part in political life? But I think this Arab party that joined the coalition isn't really speaking about a two-state solution or any kind of solution for that matter. They're sort of talking about getting budgets passed, you know, making life inside the Arab cities and villages safer. There's a deep sense in which after all of these Netanyahu years, people inside Israel and maybe outside of it have kind of lost hope for a peaceful resolution, even though I think it's not dead yet.
But the shift seems on both sides of the Green Line toward a greater obstinance, greater radicalization.
I think the last round of escalation in Gaza was really a turning point. I think part of what is really frustrating about these years of Netanyahu's rule and kind of this rightward shift, he kind of made, it sounds crazy, but he made Hamas sort of kosher in a sense for many people outside of Israel. Well, in the sense that, you know, the despair is so immense, and the pictures coming out of Gaza were just incredibly just heartbreaking for everyone to watch, that it was almost as though Hamas was seen as a kind of reasonable alternative. And of course, they're not, you know, and from my perspective, you know, I've also seen the great damage that they've caused, Hamas, and the, you know, the suicide bombings inside Israel of the 90s that have now been replaced by, you know, rocket fire and other, I think it points to a real crisis if that's the alternative sort of Palestinian movement that is on the rise now.
It never seems to get better and seems only to get worse, and at the same time to be only fitfully paid attention to in recent years.
I think that's true. But can I also say that maybe something now after this, you know, something is shifting in Israel, and I think we have to give it time, and maybe there'll be signs of hope. I don't know yet, but suddenly something is happening here. So it's worth you know, paying attention to.
That's Ruth Margalit in Tel Aviv, and this is the New Yorker Radio Hour. We'll continue in just a moment.
WNYC Studios is supported by Wondery. 50 high school senior girls descend on Mobile, Alabama every summer to compete for a massive cash prize. It isn't Survivor. It's one of America's most lucrative scholarship competitions for teen girls. It's been around for 7 decades. Now you'll hear what took place behind the scenes. From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery comes The Competition. Host Shima Oliai was Nevada's contestant 20 years ago. Now she's returning as a judge to find out what 2 weeks with 50 of the country's most ambitious teens can tell us about girlhood in America. What happens when the competitors are thrown into the deep end with the best and brightest? And how does surviving the competition prepare them for everything that comes after? Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Hi, I'm Roz Chast from The New Yorker. This episode of New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by ZBiotics. We all have busy lives these days and can't afford to waste a day on the couch because of a few drinks the night before. Luckily, a new product, ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic, is here to help. ZBiotics breaks down the byproduct of alcohol responsible for those rough mornings. Try it today by going to zbiotics.com/radiohour and get 15% off your first order when you use Radio Hour at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee. So, if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. That's zbiotics.com/radiohour and use the code RADIOHOUR at checkout for 15% off. Hi, I'm Roz Chast from The New Yorker. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by NetSuite. Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on delivering your product or service, the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified platform. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/New Yorker. netsuite.com/New Yorker.
Hi, Raja.
Hi.
It's good to see you, if even through this strange technology.
Yeah, good to see you too.
Raja Shahada is a lawyer and a writer, and he's based in Ramallah in the West Bank. So Raja, Naftali Bennett is now Prime Minister of Israel. How is this news being received in Ramallah?
Well, the news in Ramallah about the elections is that it doesn't make much difference between Benjamin Netanyahu and Naftali Bennett. I think it does make some difference, but essentially they're on the same track. It makes a difference as far as Israel is concerned, because Netanyahu was harming a lot of the institutions in Israel. But as far as the Palestinians are concerned, they're made from the same cloth.
Have the Palestinians given up on Israeli politics completely? I mean, what possible hope can be found in the Israeli political scene? The left is practically a dead letter.
Unfortunately, that is true. I read this speech to the Knesset of Naftali Bennett, and there's nothing in it about peace education, about making peace with the Palestinians. It repeats the same old stuff, that the Palestinians don't recognize the existence of the Israeli people, Jewish Israeli people on the land, and that they will continue with the settlements, and that they will stop the building of Palestinians on what is called Area C, which is 60% of the territory of the West Bank. There's not much hope, nothing to hold on to hope in the coming regime. At the same time, ultimately, it's only through Israel that we can make peace. And so it's very disappointing that there isn't a political structure in Israel which calls for peace, true peace, with the Palestinians, or a recognition of the existence of the Palestinians.
What is the political effect, the political aftermath, and even the psychological aftermath among the Palestinians of the recent conflict in last month?
Well, the Palestinians, unfortunately, have come to see that making an arms struggle with the Israelis works to some extent, because now the Israelis consider how the Palestinians are going to react. And they never did that. They just bombed Gaza without having any consideration that there would be a reaction. Now, at least, they're considering there is a reaction. This is on the one side. On the other side, the Hamas won a lot of support amongst the Palestinians, because the Palestinians in the West Bank, for example, could see that the strategy that the Palestinian Authority was following, which was to kneel down to the Israelis to try and get negotiations going and so on, and making concessions, all of that was not getting them anywhere.
Hamas is considered a terrorist group by the United States and elsewhere in the world, and it's not had a chance to run an election beyond Gaza. How would an election, if it were permitted by the Palestinian Authority, come out?
If elections take place, Hamas will win.
Roger, could you see yourself voting for Hamas or after all these years?
I think it's a tragedy to see it that way, because Hamas stands for everything I don't like. And Hamas, if it ruled here, would curb individual rights. And the same problem with the Arab party in Israel, which is now part of the government. It stands for everything that the secular Palestinians in Israel do not want. And likewise with Hamas.
Roger, forgive me for being rude, but how old are you?
I'm about to be 70.
So you're 70 years old. The situation is what it is now. Do you hold any hope for there being any kind of peace, any kind of reconciliation, any kind of true political deal with Israel in your lifetime?
I think not, because the way I see it, Israel is not moving towards the essentials for peace. And for me, the essentials for peace are coming to terms with what the, Israel did to the Palestinians in the course of its establishment. And there's no indication whatsoever that there is movement in that direction. And so as long as Israel denies that the Israel was established on the backs of the Palestinians and by forcing the Palestinians out of their land, I don't see any possibility for real peace.
Of course, many Israelis would be quick to point out that how is it possible to make peace with the particularly Hamas-led Palestinians, whose charter calls for the elimination of the state of Israel?
You know, the charter of the Likud and the Israeli government is no less fanatic than Hamas, because they say all the land of Greater Israel is, which includes the West Bank and Gaza, is Israel. So if you want to look at who is fanatic, Israel is fanatic as well as Hamas is fanatic. So it's not really just the fault of Hamas in this regard.
Roger Shahada, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Roger Shahada is based in Ramallah, and I spoke with Ruth Margalit in Tel Aviv. You can find both of their writings on Israeli politics and Palestinian politics at newyorker.com. This is the New Yorker Radio Hour, and I'm David Remnick. Thanks for listening today. See you next time.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Merrill Garbus of Tune Yards. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.